She's to sick bay. The doctor should look at it as soon as possible.
It is the way in which we propagate our species. Please demonstrate how this is accomplished.
So, what's next?
Hi, and welcome to Casual Trek, a Star Trek recap and ranking podcast brought to you by Nerd and Ty and Magical Singing Crystals. Where did they come from? Were they given to us legitimately? Maybe stop asking questions. I'm Charlie Etheridge Nunn, a writer and a Succession fan.
And I'm Miles Reed Lobato, a science fiction writer and a fan of the movie They Live. Now, Charlie.
Yeah.
Put on these sunglasses or start eating that trash can.
Oh my god. Oh my word.
Right. You're not putting on the sunglasses? We're going to have a 5-minute long fight scene in an alley about you not wearing the sunglasses.
Yeah, let's do it. It's been a while. It's, 48 episodes? It's finally come to this.
So have you seen They Live?
I have. I actually had a look at a card game based on it that actually uses the glasses as a loyalty testing method.
Nice. For purposes of when we're recording this, it is currently the 3rd of July. So tomorrow, Rihanna and I might end up watching They Live as a kind of 4th July. We did this last year, where we watched They Live and Jaws as a kind of alternate 4th of July movie experience.
Cool, yeah. My 4th of July is going to involve a lot of drinking.
To hopefully to celebrate the rousing of the Tories.
Yeah, because by the time you hear this, it'll be old news. I'm going to try and speak as little as possible about it, but I'm desperately hoping they got rid of, and my work before the impromptu election announcement had arranged for our work pub crawl treasure hunt to be on the 4th of July. So I'm going to be on the streets of Brighton dressed as a pirate, drinking a lot of whiskey, which is probably the best way of dealing with something like that.
Yeah. But anyway... Welcome to Casual Trek.
Yeah. So, each episode we watch stories from three different Star Trek shows and we rank them on a big list of best to worst. And we both love Star Trek, but it's far from our first fandom, which makes us the ultimate objective voices on such a task. And this time we're going to have a look at the weirdest little guys to get capitalism all up in this lovely, otherwise utopian post-scarcity universe. It's the Ferengi. Miles, you a fan of the Ferengi?
I'll be honest, when I first tried a huge rewatch of DS9, anytime I got to the three words Ferengi comedy episodes, I was like, I could watch this next week and then not watch the show again for another month. The Ferengi are fine as like a race. There is some very kind of anti-Semitic coding inherent in the Ferengi. It doesn't help that they usually get Jewish actors to play the Ferengi. And the trouble is, when we have to deal with unrepentant tech bros and AI in our real life, the Ferengi seem much more quaint by comparison.
Yeah. They, even at their most predatory, sometimes they can seem less all-consuming and rapacious. At least they know a society needs to exist, which is horrifying. Yeah, most of my experiences with them were either their first appearance or bits and pieces on DS9. Oh yeah, we'll get to those poses that Miles is doing soon enough. Oh, dear Lord.
Be intimidated by my arms.
Oh, my God. Oh, he's hopping around like a maniac. And, I remember fairly early on my brother saying to me, oh, yeah, Ferengi is actually a word for the English. And it's, like, not quite, but close. It's a Persian word for a foreigner, or specifically was often used for Europeans. Where, you know, it's like, okay, when it's something racist about us, that's probably fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's face it, we've done a lot of that over the centuries.
4th of July tomorrow, who dis?
Wow. So, yeah, before we get into the episodes themselves, though, Miles, what non-Star Trek thing have you been enjoying lately?
Well, this one, I went down a little trip down nostalgia memory lane yesterday. I was talking to Andy from Breakfast in the Ruins podcast, and we're talking about aliens, as sometimes we do. Sometimes we talk about aliens and not have it recorded. And we're talking about the Aliens, the heavy metal graphic novel adaptation of Alien, which came out in Heavy Metal magazine, which was drawn by young pre-fame Walter Simonson. It reminded me of one of my earliest experiences with Walter Simonson, and one of my favorite comics as like a, I think like an 11 year old, which is the Dark Horse comic RoboCop versus Terminator, which, due to rights issues, I don't think you can get anywhere apart from on Kindle. And it's a very fun crossover. It's four issues written by Frank Miller and drawn by Walter Simonson. And essentially, in the universe of this story, Skynet becomes self-aware when Alex Murphy / RoboCop's brain gets plugged into Skynet. So a rebel from the future travels back in time to kill RoboCop to prevent Judgment Day. She does this, but before time gets changed, some Terminators get sent back in time to stop this lady from killing RoboCop.
I hate when that happens.
So RoboCop ends up fighting a bunch of Terminators, realizes what's going on, pulls the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, and promptly throws himself into a garbage smasher to stop himself being plugged into Skynet.
Wow.
More Terminators come back in time, stop him from killing himself, and then plug him into Skynet, thus setting off Judgment Day. But in the dark future, Alex Murphy's consciousness is able to eventually inhabit a Terminator body, which it decks out with a jetpack and a rocket launcher to look like a RoboCop Terminator hybrid, and then proceeds to dispense violence on robots.
Wow.
I'm not doing the comic justice. It's a lot of fun. It treats the idea that these two franchises coexist in the same universe and how one could result the other. I would say actually a very clever way, because sometimes when you get these kind of Aliens versus Predator, King Kong versus Godzilla, sometimes there is thought put into them, and other times it's like, oh, let's you and he fight. Like all the times that various DC heroes have fought the Aliens and the Predators. Even though Batman versus Predator is a slice of fried gold, it does go into some good thought into how RoboCop could create Terminator. The time travel logic doesn't work at all in the way that time travel is established as working in the Terminator films. But at the same time, it is four issues of Terminator versus RoboCop carnage, and it's a nice trip down memory lane with some fantastic art and some good writing from a pre-Sin City Frank Miller.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is this Frank the Tank before the point where we all agree that he went off into the Bermuda Triangle on a boat, probably with John Byrne, and was never seen again, and we never, ever had to read anything of his?
I don't know if this came up before or after like the first Sin City miniseries. So he's still kind of got like he's still on like Martha Washington and Dark Knight Returns level of coherent sanity. He hasn't gone full on, and at no point does the word whores actually appear in the book, I think.
Oh my god. Wow. Okay. That's that sounds like a good fun time.
And Charlie, what about you? What non-Star Trek thing have you been enjoying?
So originally I put Balatro because I am still hooked on Balatro. It's got its grip into me and I only have a few jokers left to get. But I've been running the RPG Monster of the Week, which replicates kind of supernatural X-Files Buffy kind of stories. And my group selected the team playbook for touring band, and specifically a punk band. So because it's a very prep-like game, it's got more prep than a lot of Powered by the Apocalypse games, which means I need to vaguely think of some clues, a monster, and maybe a few locations and such before I begin. And that's meant most of my research time has been looking into the folklore of places around England that they might be touring, and specifically finding punk bands to listen to. Like, I know some, I'm a fan of some, and mostly older ones, like, you know, obviously a Clash and that. The only modern band that kind of fits that genre that I really know of is Amyl and the Sniffers from Australia. So I was looking at more like British acts and, you know, going a bit further afield occasionally. So finding people like Bob Villain, Arcs, who are local actually to me. Yeah, some of their music videos, I've been like, I recognize that place. I think I know which park that is. But also going a bit further afield for acts like Radical Kitten, The Chisel, and such. So yeah, it's been a good fun time. And I always like being able to delve into a bit more kind of some musical acts that I've not experienced yet. So yeah, that's been good fun. And so far the group haven't died. And
that's good.
Yeah, yeah. They have their priorities right. They were only an hour late for a gig because they were capturing a ghost in a museum. And last night in their game, they got information out of someone by agreeing to take part in his karaoke night. So, you know, proper monster hunting stuff going on.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds fun.
Yes. So, do you know what's questionably fun?
Is it Space 1999?
I mean, well, hopefully people will have listened to our previous episode and seen the, well, heard the bizarreness of Space 1999. In this case, what's questionably fun is a season one episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Eventually we're going to run out of those.
Yeah, that feels weird.
And I feel, honestly, a little sad inside.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is we can only experience Code of Honor once for the podcast. Yeah, luckily today is not that day.
Yeah, thankfully we haven't reached the Casual Trek Does Racism episode.
Oh, God. Oh, it's going to be a rough one. Yeah, so our first episode of the night is Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 1, Episode 5, titled The Last Outpost. It aired on the 19th of October 1987, teleplay by Herbert Wright, story by Richard Kresmian? Kresmian?
Kresmian?
Kresmian. Kresmian. Anyway, yes, okay. Story by Richard Kresmian, directed by Richard Koller, who... I was curious to see if the director of this episode was someone that got more work. And apparently not for this, but he directed the BSG movie and was more notably an act for many years in Days of Our Lives. And yeah, this feels like something directed by a soap opera actor.
Okay, when you say BSG movie, do you mean...
Old,
so like the original Battlestar Galactica pilot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. All right.
Yeah, God, it'd be a bit different if the remake was directed by this guy. Yeah, and the UK number one hit was the Bee Gees with You Win Again, which I'm sure we've listened to before in this, and it the video looks like he captured, like they captured one of Robert Palmer's backing dancers. It was weird. And yeah, the US had Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam with Lost in Emotion, which I'm sure I recognize bits of, but not the song itself.
Yeah. I was surprised that the Bee Gees still had a career in 1987, so I was just kind of perplexed.
Yeah, certainly a lot less hair.
Mm.
But yeah, it's one of those things where if you remember them from a specific era, seeing the later version of them, it's, oh, mortality is coming for us all. And yeah, speaking of which, mortality is coming for us. So there's only 5 minutes to recap The Last Outpost. Miles, are you up for task?
God, no.
Hooray. Okay. Well, I'll, yeah, stick my weird spear in the air and announce this challenge has begun.
And I will quote Sun Tzu, but only while recapping this episode. The Enterprise is pursuing a Ferengi vessel which was suspected of stealing a T9 energy converter from a Federation planet. Apparently, the Federation has never actually met or encountered the Ferengi, which kind of seems weird given that the Ferengi are a race of very aggressive Yankee traders, as they get referred to. The pursuit comes to a close when they arrive in orbit around a planet in the Delphi Ardu system, and there's some kind of power surge. They open fire on the Enterprise, but Picard chooses not to return fire, arguing that the Ferengi are just kind of reacting to the situation. And then suddenly, the Enterprise also starts to lose power and becomes immobilized, and shields are offline. Believing it to be the Ferengi, they try and work a way out. The engineer apparently has gone on break, and so LaForge has to go down there and just kind of manually sort something out. Picard is kind of, you know, wants to kind of meet the Ferengi. LaForge goes, "Wooey, we have a plan. We're going to just put the ship into reverse, do a quick 3-point turn, then a Yui, and then we can get the drop on the Ferengi." Guess what? Doesn't work. And the Ferengi finally contact him, and oh my god, it's a big face. It's a big giant head. Is it William Shatner? No, it's a Ferengi looking right in the camera, so close it's kind of creepy. The Ferengi accuse Picard and the Enterprise of draining the power, and Picard's like, "Nah, it's not us, fam. It's clearly you." And the Ferengi like, nope. This isn't anything to do with us. We will not surrender." And Data realizes that the energy drain isn't actually, you know, being done by the Ferengi vessel. It's actually coming from the planet, which, according to the records, and while Data is fiddling with a Chinese finger trap, which is a visual metaphor, get it, for the situation the two ships are in, that apparently that this is the outpost of an ancient, long ago space federation called the Dakon Empire, which is now extinct after several 600,000 years after their star went supernova. This is one of the last few outposts of the planet. The last outpost, if you will.
Ah.
Picard goes, "Okay, idea. Guys, what if we said to the Ferengi, hey, let's go down and investigate the planet together, and then we can find a way for both our ships to be free, and we can make peaceful contact with the Ferengi." And the Ferengi in charge goes, "Yeah, all right. Sorry, I'm not wearing any trousers. That's why I'm this close to the webcam." And so he's going to send some. We've all been there. He's going to send some people down. Riker, Worf, Data, Geordi, and Tasha all beam down. But something messes with the transporter, and they all beam down in separate places. Geordi ends up in a tree, upside down, and then suddenly Oh no, look over there in the distance. It's the Ferengi. They're skulking around. They have energy whips. They take out Data, Riker, and Geordi, and they look ridiculous. They're all jumping around like hamsters on speed and making weird gesticulations with the arms. Oh my god, so much pointing and, you know, doing a Mexican wave. Worf and Tasha kind of just turn up and just sort of scare off the Ferengi. The Ferengi are more disturbed by the fact that Tasha is wearing clothes than anything else. And suddenly there's a glowing light on a kind of bridge thingy, and this ancient haggard figure with a lumpy face.
Oh my god. The ancient haggard figure with the lumpy face says 5 minutes have passed. So, let's continue and see what the lumpy face wants.
Wait a second, that lumpy face. I recognize it. Is that Matt Smith when he's aged up in Time and the Doctor? No, it's the last emissary of the Dakon Empire, who is demanding to know why these people are here. Why you're on my planet? Get off. We don't want any. Riker tries to, you know, make contact with the mysterious figure. The Ferengi also try and, you know, make contact, you know, make peace with the mysterious figure, so he will do what they want. Riker and the others like, no, mate, you have to understand. Your empire got wiped out thousands of years ago. You don't exist. You have no meaning. We need you to lower the force field because you're draining our ship's life supports. Meanwhile, on the ships, life support is severely fading. Soon, everyone's going to die. I think Crusher knocked Wesley out, so he won't be awake when the time comes. And Picard's like, every man should learn how should face death on their own terms. Meanwhile, on the planet, the emissary from the Tacon Empire starts swinging around this spear, and he's like, Riker, you shall be tested to see if you're primitive. And he swings his spear, swingy. It's fast motion, it's kind of silly, and Riker just stands there and lets him take it. And it turns out it was a test. And the blade just is so close to turning Riker into Vincent van Gogh. Riker quotes Sun Tzu saying, fear is a true enemy, the only enemy. And the portal from the Dakon Empire goes, this is satisfactory. Maybe you're not primitive, and maybe we can learn more about Sun Tzu and Earth history. At Riker's request, he lowers the force fields, and both ships can go free. The Ferengi try and barge their way in, and the portal offers, hey, you know, I could take these guys down. Riker's like, no, they are weird, freaky gerbil people, but they remind us of what we used to be, and we have to give them the chance to grow. The Ferengi hand over the T9 power converter, but before both ships can go their separate ways, Riker beams over a box of Chinese finger traps to the Ferengi as a going away present.
Oh, what a scamp.
Such larks.
Oh, yes. That's 2 minutes and 43 over. And yeah, is that going to cause a kind of interstellar incident?
Who knows? I mean, maybe that's why the threat.
Sorry. Ooh-wee!
Ooh-wee!
Ooh-wee! Yeah.
See, this is the early installment weirdness I love from Star Trek Next Generation Series 1.
Yeah. It's impressive and weird. And I wrote down, Data's on one today. but also LaForge is weirdly excited.
I think LaForge, I think, is just caffeinated to the gills.
Yeah. Yeah, well, maybe. Like, did we find out what happened to the engineer that he was there for? It's like, finally! Finally, I can show them I'm the engineer around here.
I don't know.
Next season, sure enough, promoted.
Like, if I remember, like, season one, they just kind of rotate through chief engineers. Like, it's not a, like, it's not like a set role, like, with Scotty. It's just like, yeah, it's, you know, I don't know if that was a conscious decision on the writers to not have a chief engineer character, so we're not sticking too closely to how the original series did things.
Yeah, maybe they just realized they needed that role.
Mm.
Even if they hadn't originally planned for it.
And
I remember they even got a guy that was a recurring builder in the Gilmore Girls as someone that was there for a few episodes as chief engineer.
It's like maybe they just, from what I kind of remember from the first season episode we've watched, there's been a lot of times when Riker's had to jog down to engineering to find out what's going on with the ship. And maybe it's like, maybe we could just have one of the regular cast just kind of be there so we can cut down like Riker having to jog everywhere.
Like, we've got this set. Why not actually have someone regularly in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? And the Ferengi. I'm sure there was a reference to them in Encounter at Farpoint. And here, for the whole first act, it's like, ooh, we've never seen them. It's all mysterious. Kind of like when we first met the Romulans and no one knew what they were like. And, oh my God, they look like Vulcans. Do you reckon there was ever a time where they could have been a real credible threat, the Ferengi?
Yes, but maybe. All right, I'm gonna go back to Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
With the modern show, one of the first new alien races they created, which was going to be I think they wanted this to be like our new recurring baddie for the new show.
Yeah. It's,
The family is the Slovene, and the race name, the planet is Raxacoracophalophatorius. Yes, I practiced in 2005. And the designs look okay for 2005 BBC special effects. What they do with the characters themselves and the concept is fine. They're a crime family. They're up to crime shit. They're a hunting, so you can have them be kind of scary and murderous. The trouble is, it is all completely undercut by the fact that in their human disguises, they fart constantly. And not any kind of attempt at making them look scary. It doesn't help that the direction for that two-parter is also just really flat, which then just makes the whole sort of not greatness of the design more prevalent.
Yeah, that was the point that I gave up on Doctor Who until the Matt Smith era was about to happen. Like, I'd watched Rose, I'd watched the second episode,
The End of the World,
Far Future. Yeah, and then I missed some and saw the one with farting aliens take over London. I was like, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah,
I'm done. I don't need to see this.
Nope.
And whenever a friend of mine would go like, oh yeah, you ought to see the new Doctor Who, I was like, fighting aliens take over London. This isn't for me. I don't give a shit.
It's a metaphor for British politics. I don't know.
I mean, yeah. Again, it's become achingly real, the way that those farting aliens were. But I gave up. And it was only hearing a friend of mine talking about Farscape in the same way, going, vomit hands. No, I'm not going to watch Farscape. Guy has to get vomit on his hands to use a touchscreen. I was like, I'm going to be the bigger man here.
And beat you up.
Well, I'm a man of peace. So prove that I'm better, basically. The makeup looks all right as an alien thing.
Yeah.
It's more than just a slightly bumpy head, but they're all kind of short and like squished down, all kind of like how people would roleplay goblins or kobolds in a fantasy RPG, you know? And apparently the director's instructions were for them to jump up and down like crazed gerbils, which spot on.
Yeah.
They do that. It's not really intimidating, though.
I will actually say that, okay, one of the Ferengi on the planet is Armin Shimmerman, who will go on to play Quark.
Yes.
I think that when he's actually getting to speak, I think there is some good physicality. It reminded me of, like, the footage I've seen of him doing Richard III.
Yeah.
And he's very clearly going into this very kind of he's trying to be Machiavellian and plotting and sinister. But any kind of time they could be terrifying is undercut by the fact that they jump around like crazed gerbils.
Yeah.
And just kind of throwing their hands up in the air like they just don't care. It completely undercuts any kind of dramatic tension. Especially since the moment Worf and Tasha turn up, they just kind of like, no, go over there. You're not scary. Stop it. You're embarrassing everyone. Yeah.
Just shoo them away. They feel like slightly less intimidating versions of those fire demons from Labyrinth.
Oh yeah, I see it.
You know, who like they have all the hopping and the flailing, but there is a kind of horrific undercurrent of, oh my god, yeah, these will set light to anything, and they'll pop apart into bits. They are distressing as a child to watch, and that's great. But yeah, these guys, like, if not for Armin Shimerman doing his best to redeem them later on, they wouldn't get over it at all.
No, really. No. Did this strike you as like a weird remake of Errand of Mercy? Where you have like the two, because the Ferengi were planned to be the big bad of Star Trek, the Next Generation.
Mm.
And they go down, they meet, they get into conflict, and then a third party with omnipotent powers turns up and goes, get the fuck off my planet. Get the fuck off my planet, both of you.
I mean, it feels like they don't do enough with that. I know the core of the drama here is supposed to be the Ferengi, and the portal is kind of, is there as part of the puzzle that both sides have to actually deal with. But yeah, we've already seen a few places where there are a weird, you know, old races who have gone extinct, and that idea of this portal that was there is all that's left, you know, with the whole kind of, well, you know, we've got a lot to learn from you. It's like, no, you don't. There's no one to teach here.
You're extinct. Just go.
Yeah. You're done.
Yeah, especially when you look like that with your floppy hair and your Star Wars kid level of spear combat.
Oh god, yeah, he does look like someone's Tim the Enchanter spin-off. That, and before he appears in a physical form, I was like, oh, the big giant head from Power Rangers is in it. I've no idea if Power Rangers was before or after this, but yeah, this, it definitely had that.
Power Rangers, I think, like 95, 96.
Okay.
94. It was like, it's 94, 95, 96.
So maybe they were like, let's get that portal from Last Outpost in. We gather he's not protecting anyone anymore, so he's free to work.
We're going to stick him in like this West Coast America town, which occasionally looks like Japan in the stock footage, and just have him recruit teenagers with attitude.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, if you need combatants, as Professor X proved, get teenagers with attitude.
Yeah, it's...
So...
I like the planet design. This was... Mm-hmm. I remember this one, I kind of remember vividly, because I think this is one of the first episodes of Next Gen I saw on TV. But also, I remember this from photos in the Star Trek The Next Generation comic that was being put out, I think, either by Marvel UK or by Fleetway back around about the time. And it had an article on this episode. And it had a picture. It's a picture of the screenshot of when Riker first appears on the planet. And it's just like this really dark blue stormy sky.
Yeah, for another use of their Planet Hell set, you know, which we've seen a couple of times already from this season. They do some nice things to make it look a bit different for rest. And yeah, as you say, that kind of stormy nature is quite good at distinguishing it from, say, that weird place that Q put them on with the orcs.
So I have a question for you.
Hmm.
Charlie, does Captain Picard do a swear in this episode?
Yeah. He got a murd past the past the censors here, which I assume was a cheeky, I've got this one past them sort of thing. Yeah, that was fun to see. You don't often see that sort of thing. I think, what was it? One of the episodes of X-Files, one that Stephen King wrote.
Oh, God.
Was given. Yeah. was given Swear originally as its name. I want to say it was like, oh, was it Cholo or something? But yeah, basically, it's, yeah.
Oh, Steve.
Oh, Steve.
God, and then there's Misa, who is all shocked when in a 1970s John Pertwee story, someone says, for God's sake, use the bomb.
Ah.
It's weird how just, you know, have you ever seen the 1984 animated Transformers movie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my dad took us to see that multiple times.
Because there is a point, which is edited out of some releases on video, where Spike, the token, one of the two token humans the film has, says, oh shit, what are we going to do now?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, always love it when they, you don't get that so much in family films these days. Like, I remember, like, stuff like E.T. and the Goonies, when characters would just drop some swear words in.
Yeah. Okay, so it was chinga.
Oh, okay.
Which is apparently a colloquial Spanish swear word, primarily used in Mexico.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. With chinga tu madre is fuck your mother. So, well done, Steve, for putting that in there, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, the merd, at least... You know, I think there's another, this isn't the only time that he'll do that. And yeah, it feels very murd-worthy moment. Yeah, God, and yeah, Data, when he got off on one on Flag Chat, was, like, Picard, it's briefly mentioned on the bridge. Oh yeah, this, you know, heraldry, like flags. Oh, what's flags? Well, nations used to do this. Including, for example, red, white, and blue. Or, you know, Picard being Picard has to go, well, actually, the French one's like this.
The French, and the French did it right.
Yeah, basically he says that. And then, yeah, Data just starts listing flags. And it's like, no, mate, you don't need to do this. Like, we get it. We get it.
Man, this is that early, like... Is that early next gen when Data is kind of annoying because Data is perpetually TMI?
Yeah, I think so. So, yeah, speaking of TMI, let's discuss putting it on our big old list. We're currently at 114 entries. All the way at the top, we have Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Down at... Episode 100, we've got Prodigy's Lost and Found, the pilot, and well done, Prodigy, for having season 2 come out. I've not seen any of that yet, because I've not even finished Discovery, and oddly enough, I'm a little bit casual with these things.
Yeah.
And then finally at the bottom, we have Strange New Worlds' Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach, with the Child Killing Machine, which, let's face it, the Ferengi would try to monetize... The Child Killing Machine. God, actually, yeah, there's a way of making it worse.
I don't know. I think even the Ferengi have to understand that ruthless exploitation and child death is bad for business in the long term.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully they would think that. So, like, where do you reckon this would go?
Okay, I see that you've highlighted number 99, which is Encounter at Farpoint, the pilot of TNG.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be our classic benchmark, and now it's almost at the 100 point on here. I'd say this isn't a good episode.
No.
It's less awful than I thought it was going to be.
I don't think it's as bad as Encounter at Farpoint, because I feel like even now, the actors are starting to get the characters. Geordi's weird Mr. Meeseeks impression aside.
Yeah, aside from that. Okay, a little further up, there's Justice in spot number 96, where Planet Fuck gets the excursion from the Enterprise ruined, thanks to Wesley. And again, we're talking not a good episode from season one, but kind of more fun. Like, both of them have one or two moments which are the memorable bits and little else.
Yeah, like, there is some fun stuff here. It's just, it's not a lot of it.
Yeah.
I mean, so, okay, I did like the speedy up spear action.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think that was the point when I texted you and going, are we watching an episode of The Mighty Boosh?
Yeah, you sent me that, and it was fairly late at night, so I went to bed just thinking, oh, shit, it is. Just add a musical number. You've got a weird alien world. You've got little guys hopping around.
Yeah.
All you need is some... hopefully not quite intentional blackface. And yeah, there you go. You've got a Mighty Boosh.
You have passed the test. The spear test.
Exactly. Yeah. So what are we saying? Better or worse than Justice?
I don't know. I think Justice is better.
Yeah.
There's a lot of running around. There's a lot more of the... I would say we have the same levels of weird season one awkwardness, but it's also mixed in with that Gene Roddenberry level of horny.
Yeah.
Which we've all come to dread.
Yes. Yeah, it's not quite the level of Claremont horniness.
And let's be honest, any episode where Wesley beams down to a planet, rejects sex, and then immediately gets put to death for an entirely different reason... I think it's a much better episode because of it.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I think 97 Spectre of the Gun's probably better as well.
Yep.
Like, just for the aesthetic of the weird set, that's great fun. Okay, what about Home from Enterprise? That's 98, and... that's got some really bad, like, Halo 1 graphic CGI Earth. And Earth is racist now. Like, Space 9/11 happened. And unfortunately, Earth has taken the example of being, like, immediately post 9/11, War on Terror era America.
I think this might be better because...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's not that it comes out of nowhere. It's just that it never really sort of... The episode seems more concerned with Archer's man pain than maybe confronting the racist underpinnings of Western imperialist society.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of expected more of it than... yeah, just, oh, Phlox, maybe don't go to Earth anymore.
Yeah, maybe go to better... Wow. Maybe go to a better bar.
Yeah,
like
yeah, go to less racist places.
Like, I'm trying to remember, is there a point when, like, do the crew of the Enterprise beat up some racists, or they just kind of like, no? Phlox,
like, they get in a bit of a fight and nope out, but they don't come back and stop any of it or go, hey guys, maybe don't do a racism.
They don't
space. Full of non-humans.
They don't do, like, we have been at war and this is what we come back to.
Sadly, no. No. And where is...
You need, like, Matt Berry to do a where is your god? Where is your god now? Kind of... Oh, man. I want Matt Berry in a Star Trek so much.
Yes.
He doesn't...
Definitely.
He doesn't need to be, like, a main character. We just need to just slap some latex on him and have him be, like, son of Grappler Zorn.
That would be great. Yeah, so that puts at spot number 98, The Next Generation's The Last Outpost, which luckily, given that season one, there are a lot more outposts to come and a lot more last outposts as well. So our second episode for night is a lot more modern. It's Star Trek Prodigy, season one, episode 7. Which is First Contact. See what they did there?
Oh, I see what they did there.
Yeah, so this aired on the 13th of January, 2022, written by Deandra Pendleton-Thompson, directed by Steve Ahn and Sung Shin. And the UK number one hit was Adele with Easy On Me, which I'm sure we've covered before, and it's all right.
Yeah.
You know, Adele's... very skilled, very good, but also I do find a lot of her tracks seem a little samey. So.
And what was the US number one?
This was the 13th of January. US people, what the fuck? It was Mariah Carey with All I Want for Christmas Is You. Christmas was over.
On a once.
What the fuck?
I don't know. Once, 1st of January, I walked into a burger restaurant and they were still playing Christmas music. And I went up to them and I was like, why are you still playing Christmas music? It's the new year. And like, we know, we can't turn it off. I have never tipped a restaurant staff that quickly and that much before.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, you know what? Yeah, there's $10.
Heroes.
Yeah. So as we said last time, because we've had a talk, this is one of those songs where we're like, no, I don't want to listen to this.
Yeah.
And we've also, I can't remember how many episodes ago we decided that if we have a repeat performer, we get to pick a song to talk about.
Yeah. So in this case, because I'm recapping this, I figured, right, I'm picking a song, and it's one of the songs that one of a few times the algorithm served me well.
Wow.
Because on YouTube, I was watching some Bob Villain videos, and he guested on a track by Kid Capitri called New England. And yeah, it's very good fun, especially right now.
Yeah.
Given the hellscape of the last decade and change. And yeah, it's from from their album, This Is What You Could Have Won, which again, like, I think the second track's about stealing stuff from a supermarket. So there's a definite tone to Capitri's work.
I watched the video you sent me, and for the first time in this show, when the song had finished, my immediate reaction was, I have to listen to this again right now.
Yeah.
Because this song, honestly, I think this is the song that I've been hearing in my soul for so long. It just felt good to have that scream of frustration vocalized.
Definitely. Definitely. It feels almost cathartic listening to. And yeah, they're also South Coast folks. They're Hastings based.
I thought that was their, like, some of the videos, like, is that Brighton?
So there are bits in London, but yeah. I know the bits you're thinking of. No, that's Hastings.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I recommend people check that out. It's hopefully something that we'll be moving away from as a people, but unfortunately, as a country that will care far more about the bins than about the creeping rise of fascism and all of that, I fear that it's still going to remain relevant.
Yeah. Although I was going to quickly mention another favorite kind of, also another a group which I love, who are also local, Sea Power, formerly British Sea Power, who did the soundtrack for Disco Elysium, a magnificent game.
Oh God, yeah.
And yeah, I didn't know that they were a Brighton lot.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so you know, hometown represent. Anyway, Charlie asked his traditional. For animated episodes, we go for 3 minutes. So you have 3 minutes to recap this episode of The Prodigy.
Wow.
Okay, you ready?
Yep.
And engage.
So, Dal's reviewing the logs of the Protostar, trying to find out what happened to the crew, while everyone else has discovered transporters. They're having fun, beaming slices of pie around the ship. It could be worse. Oh wait, it is. They also beam Murph and accidentally send it outside the ship. Luckily, Murph's pretty resilient. There's a distress call that comes through. Oh no, a ship in trouble. It's all falling apart. There's a plague. There's orphans. The whole bag. Sure. Almost too good to be true for a bunch of kids wanting to do good deeds. Dal calls bullshit on this, and we discover that the call's from a Ferengi. Not just any Ferengi, but the one that raised Dal. Yeah, that's right. He has a Yondu. His Yondu is called Daimon Nandi, and this is how progressive the Ferengi Alliance will become, having a female dressed and a Daimon as well. The Prodigies beam over, and Dal immediately picks up the Ryzen Fuck statue from Captain's Holiday in TNG. Nandi's pleased to see Dal, as he's been missing for years and she's been looking all over for him. Dal shows everyone his room, which is tiny and underneath the engines, but it, you know, it was home. Nandi has a hoarder's paradise, a load of junk, including a Klingon cloaking device, which would be perfect for the Protostar. It needs Chimerium, which they even have. So here's a deal. Nandi says it's theirs. They do a completely 100% legit job for her. There's a planet with some weird crystals. She needs one to pay off some Dabo debts. It's pre-first contact, and she offers up an old shitty metal plate, saying to trade that for the crystal. Dal sells it to the crew as a diplomatic mission, and they're all thrilled, apart from Hologram Janeway, who brings up the Prime Directive. But it's too late. They're all very excited to do this. The planet itself is a massive desert. And where are the life forms? Apparently everywhere. The sand, it rises up, it attacks them, surrounds them, and drops them into a cave with singing crystals and weird little crystalline entities. They talk by singing through the crystals, and each crystal matters. The prodigies obviously realize they can't take this, any of them away. But Nandi can. She's come along too. She grabs a bunch, runs off, and everything starts falling down. Dal tackles her. They have a bit of a fight, and Nandi reveals that she sold Dal to the mines. Oh shit. She still beams away with one of the crystals. It's oh. tricky beaming. Oh, so close. Those 3 minutes have beamed away from me as well.
All right. Okay. You have to make sure that every word in your recap matters. Stop watch going now.
So, it's tricky beaming Dal away from the planet as he doesn't have his comm badge. What's up with that? Well, Dal reveals. He placed it on the crystal, which somehow Nandi didn't notice, and beams it away from her ship, back to the planet where it belongs. Hologram Janeway tells everyone this is a shit first contact. It doesn't matter that you save the day. These guys are not ready to speak to outsiders, and you've just made it worse. Dal feels like a real putz for trusting his parental figure, and Gwyn says, hey, welcome to the club. Nandi's annoyed by the way events have turned out, but her weird companion cube friend shows her that the Diviner has a bounty out on Dal, so maybe she'll get some money for him after all. Oh dear.
55 seconds.
Okay. Yeah, so I didn't realise there was going to be Ferengi and Prodigy until I started doing a quick synopsis list of the episodes for our big sheet, because
You're a freak like that.
I am a freak like that. Some of the shows I don't have little synopses for, because I can vaguely remember what a lot of the TNG and DS9 ones are, but some like Voyager and Prodigy and animated series, I've got no clue. Oh, and Enterprise, of course.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, there are a lot of plague ones, I think, for that.
Okay.
But yeah, weird. But yeah, it was interesting seeing a Ferengi in this bit of time that's after, you know, after the end of the Berman Braga era. And while we see one tending bar in Discovery in the far, far future, yeah, this was one of the last ones in the timeline, I guess, that we've seen so far. Also, yeah, Dal has a Yondu, and being trained by a Ferengi explains a lot. I don't know if they figured that would be the case, or if it's mentioned in any of the early episodes that a Ferengi raised him, but yeah.
I don't think it sounds like one of those things that like they probably have written into the show Bible to plan for his arc of growing up and becoming a leader.
Yeah. Yeah, we do get a little bit more of the overall plot about the Protostar, but it's, you know, not entirely pertinent here. We see a little bit of Captain Chakotay on a videotape, but yeah. I assume these will be more relevant in other episodes.
So out of, you know, I know every time we come back to Prodigy, my question to you seems to be, how is your opinion of Dal changing? Because I mean, And funny because I remember you weren't really. I believe your reaction to Dal in the first episode of the series was, "Oh, another snarky wise ass. No, thank you."
Yeah, you're kind of poochy kind of character.
You're street rat. He's basically Aladdin.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I think it was more positive with this one because you actually get to see a bit more of what makes him tick. You know, he's not just, hey, I'm too cool for your rules kind of person. You know, it's not like, yeah, I'm going to wear this baseball cap on backwards. I'm even going to ride a skateboard and I might do a flip. Yeah, radical, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, he was fine. It was very much his story, like the others were about. You know, there were a couple of nice moments when they were seeing the singing, ringing crystals. And in that sense of, oh, shit, yeah, like, this is fascinating.
There is a sense of wonder to the universe. Yeah,
definitely. And I love that with an animated show, you can make the aliens really freaky.
Yeah.
Like, really odd. Like the weird, tiny, crystalline things.
And your boy Jankin Pog gets to do some transporter action.
Yes. Yeah, that seemed like an odd start to it, transporting a pie. But why not? I guess. It took me a moment to realize, oh, of course, because these lot will not have seen, or unlikely to have seen, a transporter before. Yeah. So, of course, they're going to have some wacky hijinks with it compared to, you know, the crew of the Enterprise on Enterprise. Who were more like, oh, that's going to pull you apart and might not put you back together right. So, yeah, it was fine. It definitely felt a bit more Star Trek than the pilot episode did. That was appreciated. Yeah, the weird alien in the video footage of Janeway, actual Janeway and Chakotay, looked like we only saw a little bit of it, but it did look a bit kind of generic Xbox 360 alien villain.
Yeah. I did like, I think the thing I really did like in the episode, which is something I'm glad that cartoons for kids does more of these days, unlike the very kind of sanitized shows that we came up on, was that at the end, Janeway goes, yeah, you fucked it. You fucked it, yeah. Royal. You screwed up. Feel bad about that.
Yeah, and it won't be the only time that Dal does that, cause we've seen him in the holodeck messing up the Kobayashi Maru. So yeah, it's nice that he isn't automatically always right, and it doesn't always win despite never actually doing what Starfleet would want or anything.
It doesn't, you know, there is very much no reset button. With the, even in like the live action shows of like the Berman era, there is very much a, okay, we've got to put everything back in the box.
Yeah, like Worf definitely kills a guy at one point, but we will not speak of this again.
We will never talk about Tuvix, we will never talk about Tom Paris pulling out his own tongue and having salamander babies with Janeway.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, which, frankly, I would consider quite memorable.
Yeah, Dal said he'd do a Starfleet and did it for non-Starfleet purposes. You gotta live with that. You have to live with that now.
Yeah, and that's great. You know, it helps feel like these are characters who are forming.
Yeah.
And because they're young, you know, they've got a lot of learning. They've got a lot of mistakes and hopefully a lot of fun times ahead.
And I think I've seen the first 14 episodes of the show. And I do think that there is a growing up of the characters.
Good. Yeah, I'd quite like to see some of the others featured as well, because I don't feel I've got as much of a grasp on Ruptok or Gwyn yet.
Yeah.
But we saw some nice bits of Zero, and yeah, we've seen a couple of fun things with Dal.
And Murph is just all id.
Yeah. Oh, adorable. Just a fun little pile of goo.
And speaking of fun little piles of goo, our list.
Okay, yes, sure. So let's see. I think it's definitely better than the pilot.
Yep.
which is in spot 101. I guess one point to wonder about is spot number 80, which is Kobayashi, where Dal does his terrible speed run of Kobayashi Maru, and we get a lot of recorded footage of varying levels of quality of classic Star Trek actors. Do you reckon this is better or worse?
Oh, it's hard to say. Because
this is the episode after that.
Yeah. I think, like, story-wise, I feel like this is better story-wise, whereas I'd say that Kobayashi is definitely more of a character piece.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're quite right as far as the story of it, but at the same time, while Kobayashi has a lot of fan service, it is forcing Dal to understand failure is an option.
Failure
is a thing that you may have to do, and you know, you do get that fan service of going, yeah, let's try the animated style for some of these live action people.
But yeah, I think, you know, in terms of what is quintessentially Star Trek, this one, with all intents and purposes, they try and do a Starfleet, they screw up, and then continue to do a Starfleet.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, they're both definitely very comparable.
Right, let's see. All right, so we've got episode 70, we've got number 76 on the list, which is the first episode of season 3 of Picard, The Next Generation, where we're going to get the band back together, but really slowly, and with a lot more 7 and 9 and Shaw.
Yeah.
Is that one better or worse than First Contact?
God, this is one of those ones where it's difficult measuring them all against one another for this, because similar to Kobayashi, actually, there is that fan service aspect of going, hey, we're getting the TNG crew back together. But like this, I think this might be a little bit better because it does a lot more with the time it's given.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're talking an episode that's what, about a third the length? And you get a full bit of a Star Trek. You get an ensemble doing stuff.
I feel Picard suffers from Warren Ellis-esque deconstruction.
Yes. Well, that, yeah, the decompression.
That's it. Decompression.
Yeah. Yes. Or like Bendis.
So, okay. And then above number 76, we have number 75, which is Yesteryear, where Spock gets erased from time, goes back in time, meets his young self, gets his childhood pet viciously wounded, and then tells his younger self, right, euthanasia, yay or nay, in an actually very touching episode.
Yeah. God, I think Yesteryear is more fun. Like, I immediately started lighting up when you were saying all of that. Like, that is a lot of nonsense, and I am down for that nonsense.
All right, so shall we say that this is our new number 76?
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds good. God. Yeah, all of those time shenanigans. So, okay.
Oh, and then, then there was that one guy. The one, you know, who didn't... Oh, God,
just vanished.
Yeah, he just vanished. Screw that guy. He knows what he did.
What would be nice is if he ended up in the time police or something. It's like, I don't know what happened. But, you know... I was there for one moment. Reality changed. They went back, fixed it. They didn't pick me up. And now I'm an anomaly. That's a rough experience.
All right.
So.
Okay. One more episode to go. And Charlie, what is that final episode?
So we are going back in time a little to Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Season 3, episode 23, titled Family Business. This aired on the 15th of May, 1995, written by Ira Stephen Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolfe, and directed by Odo himself. Yeah, René René Auberginois. This has been a terrible episode for me pronouncing things. Anyway, yes, him. The UK number one hit was Live in Joy with Dreamer, which I only remember bits of, so I assume it was remixed in some other techno track. And and the US had Montel Jordan with This Is How We Do It, which I'm pretty sure I only remember from Dance Central.
We're from Brighton. We heard this. We heard this as background. This is 90s background radiation.
Yeah. Yeah. If you've been to a club in this sort of era, then yeah, you'll have heard Live and Joy. And yeah, Montel Jordan, it's like, it's that sort of New Jack Swing sort of thing. Didn't really come over as much, but it was still there, just in the background. Apart from, yeah, if you play a dancing game on the Kinect, which I certainly did.
As always, Charlie, you're a man of culture and class.
Hell yeah. God, I'm sure I've still got some videos of that on the iPad.
Oh, which, no.
Yeah, I should delete, lest someone find access to them and use them as blackmail.
We should delete, lest someone make them a Patreon goal.
Oh, no. That would be horrific. Right, so, yeah, it's time for you to have some dramatic family business starting now.
Cisco is making chicken paprikash, and he's having a good day. Jake comes in, and Jake's like, hey, you know my friend Cassidy Yates? She's on the station. Why don't you meet her? I think you two could get along. I mean, Dad, I think it's time for you to start dating again. And Cisco's like, well, we'll see. I'll meet her, but chicken paprikash. Meanwhile, in Quark's, business is doing fantastic. Quark is a bit upset that Nog has the night off to study for his Starfleet entrance exams. But Rom's like, hey, you know, it's fine. He has to study. He wants to do this. And Quark's like, nope, this is the end of Ferengi civilization. A Ferengi in Starfleet.
Those young'uns.
No, a Ferengi in Starfleet. Soon all the Ferengi want to be in Starfleet. And what next? Cats and dogs living together. Women wearing clothes and making profit. And suddenly, wait, who is this? It's the man, the myth, the legend, the Jeffrey, the Combs himself, playing Brunt, a member of the FCA. Oh no, Quark's bar is being shut down. He's being audited. Brunt is going over all of Quark's financial records, well, at least the one Quark will admit to. It turns out that Quark and Rom's mother, Ishka, has been doing stuff that is not very good, because she's a woman, and thus she's not allowed to wear clothes, she's not allowed to acquire profit, and apparently she's acquired free bars of latinum. Free bars of latinum, you say? Ooh. Well, to make this all just go away, Quark is going to go to Ferenginar and get his mother to confess to her crimes, pay off the fine, everything will be okay. There's some bad blood between Quark and his mother. He's not been back in 20 years. Meanwhile, Rom is a bit more of a mother's boy and tags along because he wants to see their Moogie again. They make it to Ferenginar, which is a more rained out, dull hellscape than parts of England I've been to, where everything has a paywall. Even the front door has like a slot machine to put some money in, and any guest has to acknowledge that everything in the home belongs to the owners. Ishgar turns up and she's wearing clothes and is talking to Brunt, and Brunt is basically having a meltdown, like Rishi Sunak having a conversation with a homeless person in the soup kitchen. Quark's just like, okay, Brunt, I'll take care of this. I've got 3 days. Go. Immediately, Quark and Ishgar start squabbling. Because, you know, he sends her every month a generous stipend. You know, she should be fine. She should be able to, like, live off that. She shouldn't be, like, you know, bucking the very tenets of Ferengi society. Meanwhile, you know, Rom's just loving, just getting to have his mother just mother him. Meanwhile, back on DS9, Dax is like, hey, Cisco, I met Cassidy Yates, and you know what? If I were Curzon, I'd have stolen her from you already. You should go and see her. And Cisco's like, has my son been talking to you? I'll get to it. Jeez, old man, I am glad you are a woman And at no point can we not have anything resembling 100% heteronormativity in the Star Trek universe. I'll get to it. Meanwhile, back on Ferengina, Quark's been looking over Ishkar's records. It's actually more than 3 bars of latinum. She's been doing a lot of dealing, a lot of very good dealing, and she has so much latinum just stashed away that if Quark can find it, the FCA will find it, and the fines Quark will have to pay is more than the money that Quark has. They're going to risk being broke. Quark and Ishkar get into an argument. Quark is like, you know, Ishkar brings up the fact that Keldar, Quark's father, wasn't any good at business. And Quark's like, how dare you besmirch my father like that? I am going to turn you in.
Oh, no. Oh, dear. I'm going to have to bill you for exceeding the 5 minutes.
All right, fine. Here's your 2 slips of latinum.
Thank you. And now you may continue.
Wait, hang on. Here's the 2 sips of latinum to have the stopwatch go.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Thank you. So Quark is going to go off to basically turn his mother in and find a way to cut a deal so that she takes the rap and he gets away scot-free. Rom and Quark get into a fight. As much of a fight as two brothers can when they're wearing that much makeup. Ishkar breaks up the fight and says, Quark, if it means that much, you go ahead. Turn me in. I don't care. Quark goes to the FCA building, walks up 40 flights of stairs because he's not paying the seven strips of latinum to pay for the lift. This is the future tech bros want.
Yeah.
After some shenanigans with sitting or standing, Rom rushes up and is like, hey, 40 flights of stairs. Wow. By the way, Mookie wants to cut a deal with you and split it 50-50. Aha! 50-50, you say, says Quark. And immediately says, actually, I know where Brunt lives. I'll come back later. Come on, we'll take the elevator. I'm good for it now. Meanwhile, back on DS9, O'Brien and Bashir, with Odo watching awkwardly, are trying to break into Quark's because they want their lucky dartboard back. Not that they say it's a lucky dartboard, but they want their dartboard back. Oh, those lads. And
oh dear.
Those United
Kingdom. Those likely lads.
Those United Kingdom based lads. Sisko turns up and goes, break and entering? Okay, fine. I'll allow it. And O'Brien's like, so, are you going to meet Cassidy Yates? Apparently, Jake has been telling everyone. Sisko was like, does everyone have an opinion on my love life? And
yeah,
immediately puts his foot into it. Odo just kind of looks away embarrassed because, you know, Odo says he's not about the tea. Odo is definitely all about the tea. Sisko goes and meets Cassidy Yates in a docking bay. And it's a little bit awkward, but like they agree to meet for coffee later. Meanwhile, back on Ferengina. No, it turns out that Ishkar wasn't going to give Quark 50-50. And it turns out that Rom lied to both Quark and Ishkar to get them to actually start talking again. And Rom is doing the old sitcom bit of he's going to lock them in this room. And they're not allowed to come out until they've come to an understanding and not to shout. Rom's going to take a nap. Quark and Ishkar actually start talking and they start to kind of reminisce about old times. And while Ishkar admits, yeah, your father, Keldar, he was not a good businessman, but he was a good husband. He was a good father. And while, you know, you looked up to him, you're not like Rom is very much like your father and you were very much like your mother. And, you know, you may have looked up to your father, but it was me who helped you learn the rules of acquisition. And that I was really proud of the fact that you learned them. And this kind of breaks the ice between them. And Quark admits that he loves his mother. And Ishkar admits that she'll confess to her crimes to get Quark out of trouble because they all love each other that much. Brunt comes back and signs off on the confession. And yeah, they've owned up to Ishkar's crimes. Although Rom and Ishkar know the truth, that Quark only knows about some of the crimes that Ishkar has committed, and they're just going to keep quiet. Once again, we have learned that Rom is a lot cleverer than Quark actually gives him credit for. And, you know, they're going to head home, but they're going to head back to DS9 because it's the bar that's supporting them now. But Quark admits that I will come back a lot more often, and that, you know, Quark loves his mother. Meanwhile, back on DS9, the coffee between Sisko and Cassidy doesn't go too well when Cassidy goes, "Oh, wait, I remember a prior appointment. Turns out that my brother is playing this game called Baisa Ball on the colony of Cestus 3, and Sisko goes, "Wait a second. Baseball, you say?" And Cassidy goes, "Oh, yeah, that's it, baseball." But it's called Rounders for a second. And Sisko's like, "Hey, your brother likes baseball. I like baseball. Maybe we could go listen to the game together, and maybe we could have another date sometime." Turns out that, you know, Jake, you know, might have been a pretty good matchmaker after all. And as Sisko and Cassidy go off to Cassidy's quarters to listen to baseball, it pans up to see Jake just staring down creepily from the promenade going, "That's right. I'm the god. I am the matchmaker here. I will get my dad laid. After all, this has been quite some family business."
Hey. Yeah. Yeah. What the hell? So 5:40.
Okay.
But this is one of those ones where you watch it and go, "Yeah, that was a good one. That was a good slice of track." But yeah, how I kept watching and going, like, how did Jake meet Cassidy Yates? And, like, what happened? Or does he just go up to anyone who comes by and goes, you know, "Oh, will this new arrival make for a good parent?"
I don't know, because How old is Jake meant to be at this point? How old is Jake even meant to be in the show in general?
Know. Like, he feels like he shouldn't be, like, urchin age or anything. And if Nog's studying for Starfleet Academy, like, yeah, like, then he must be a bit older by this
like
point.
In early DS9, when he's very much younger, I assumed he was, like, 12, 13. But, like, given how he presents himself in the show, I'm assuming he's meant to be, like, in his late teens at least. Like, 18, 19.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, is he just older than the character? Let's see. I am going to be terrible now and have a look online. The episode was 2371. He was born in 2355.
Okay, so 2355. So he'd have been 20. Then he'd been 10 in 2365. And then this is 2371, you said.
Yep.
So yeah, he would be 16. So yeah, okay. Okay.
Bit odd.
Yeah.
Bit weird, but yeah, okay, fine, I guess.
Like, maybe Jake is just that stereotype, you know. Maybe Jake is that weird, rare, unique creature of a writer who doesn't have any issues with social interaction.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know if he's got to the whole writer thing at this point. You know, it might be that once he decides, all his social abilities vanish. You know, it's like, once I started working in a comic shop, my ability to ever tan vanished.
Yeah.
And didn't come back until I left there. That sort of thing. But yeah, it felt weird that there was not an explanation of how they met or anything like that. I don't know if that'll come later.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't...
Is that the fan or something?
There's no, that's some kind of... That is the... test for the tornado siren.
Huh.
Because we have those here.
Yeah, of course. Wow. Okay, does it go on long? Or
no, shouldn't it go on too long.
Cool.
Okay, I'm actually going to quickly.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like an ominous string, like Michael Giacchino would use.
First time I heard it, I was like, oh my god, are the Germans bombing? But now it's just like, nope, this is Silent Hill. So yeah, Sisko and Cassidy subplot aside, which was fun, and the shenanigans over the dartboard.
Mm. Oh god, those lads! Just seeing them try to break in, I was, oh no.
Oh dear.
Oh, what are they up to?
Well, Odo's just standing there going, not a part of this, not a part of this.
Yep. Not going to press charges, but not going to approve of it either. You know, they'll probably injure themselves more likely than injuring the door.
Yeah.
And also, it's Odo's door. So, you know, that's fine. There was a weird thing for me. So I work in a part public body who deal with the Financial Conduct Authority fairly regularly, or the FCA, which Brunt works for and kept mentioning, which is the Ferengi Commerce Authority. So yeah, that was weirdly jarring hearing, you know, Brunt FCA a lot. And yeah, such a joy to see Jeffrey Combs there as well. Yeah, just a nicely sinister, horrible Ferengi.
A slimy middle manager.
Yeah, I mean, that said, you want a scary Ferengi. Like, you want a horrible Ferengi. You don't get people to jump up and down like frantic gerbils.
Yeah.
You do this. Like, he is going to come at you with the law.
He's going to...
The worst parts of it.
He's going to audit you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. God, I remember running a convention game of Spycraft where both the players took the same character class before they showed up and were snoops. So they were very much like, we will defeat these enemies with a briefcase full of subpoenas. And yeah, it was terrifying to see. So yeah, this kind of antagonist, you know, I know that Brunt returns, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
So the whole Quark, Rom, Ishkar family drama. I did like what we saw of Ferengina. I like the little paywall, like little kind of cash dispenser.
God. Yeah, and their little hobbit hole door.
Yep.
As well. Where it's like, okay, this feels badly made to make people duck, but they've probably done that on purpose for Ferengi.
Yeah.
Of like, yeah, you're going to have to bow and scrape to get in to a place. It was interesting seeing that world, because I don't know if I've seen an episode on Ferenginar before.
No, I think this is the first time they go.
And yeah, while they change up the actress of Ishka later on, the dynamic between the three of them was very good fun.
Yeah.
I think most of us could see coming that this isn't going to be all of her money.
No.
And yeah, it landed very well at the end with that, with Quark having kind of, yes, he's done the right thing by Ferengi standards. And, you know, he's got everyone in the right place and everything. But no, as ever, as you say, Rom kind of knowing a bit more than he should. And the fact that, like, Rom and his personality and his attitude came from somewhere with their late father, compared to Ishka, totally makes sense with that. And
yeah,
why she would be this savvy if she was married to, you know, a Rom type person. So yeah, that was good. Yeah, I liked the family drama. Apparently, Ira Stephen Bear wanted it to be a serious Ferengi episode. Kind of a long day's journey into night, but with Ferengi. And he admitted afterwards it didn't quite do that. It wasn't quite to that level, but it still felt like a good fun drama. And the horror, the capitalist horror of Ferenginar was fascinating to see.
Like, you could do like a very kind of Terry Gilliam-esque corporate nightmare world of Ferenginar.
Oh, definitely. And quite often you get with Star Trek that issue of they start out making very much monocultures. Like, yeah, every Klingon's like this. Every Ferengi's like this. But when they start having to peel it back
yeah.
and go, oh shit, but what would it look like? We've seen some really, really awful Ferengi. How do they exist though? And yeah, bribes a lot of the time. Lot of money. As you say, it is exactly that future that the tech bros want.
Yeah.
Just seeing today about how Dungeons and Dragons is kind of having subscription levels and pre-order bonuses and trying to bring every bit of shitty video game stuff that companies like Ubisoft did, but for role-playing games. And luckily it is literally just that one role-playing game. So there are thousands of others that people can play where you don't have to deal with that bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, you've mentioned a good ton of them on this show.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, so seeing that kind of existence, which I can see why you would get people like Quark going out there into the world going, right, no, there is a lot of this to exploit where I don't have to play that game. I can do my own thing. Or for someone like Nog, it's got to be a real sense of freedom.
It's just got to be Quark's
whole, those young'uns experimenting with not being in a capitalist society, how dare they?
Like, it's funny because, like, Quark seems to be, like, I would say small C conservative with but he's surrounded by an incredibly, increasingly radicalized family. Like, you have Ishgard, who is basically first stage Ferengi feminist by going, I'm going to wear clothes and I'm going to engage in business.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely been nice seeing that kind of development. And yeah, as you say, like, in a way, Quark, as fascinating as he is the most vanilla Ferengi out of that entire family.
Yeah. Like, you know, and at the same time, we see that Quark, you know, despite his greed and his adherence to the you know, Ferengi doctrines, has a sense of morality. Because we've seen that in, like, House of Quark. We haven't mentioned here where Ishgard mentions that he sends her a fairly good-sized stipend. It's not as if she's living in destitution. I mean, okay, he'll sell his mother out to protect his own interests. But that's before he finds out just how much she's been making.
Yeah, yeah. The moment that he realizes she's loaded and way more than him. Oddly enough, things change.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this was a very good one, even with that kind of underlying fear of, oh no, is it going to be a Ferengi comedy episode?
I don't really feel it's that much of a comedy episode. At least it's not as...
Oh god, it's not.
I would say it's not as broadly done as most Star Trek comedy episodes. It feels very much a family drama. It's just the comedic elements are... The ludicrousness of Ferengi society, with the fact that Quark will walk 40 flights of steps rather than shell out for an elevator.
Yeah, yeah. Ferengi culture is the main comedy of it. But yeah, it was a good fun time. I'm wondering where this goes on the list then.
Let's see. Where would you say?
Good question. I was having a look at these, and where was it? Our man Bashir was good fun. I think possibly better than this, because everyone gets involved.
Yeah.
With the scrapes. But yeah, try and have a look for potential episodes of DS9 that were good fun, but, you know, also a bit serious. We've got Rejoined, which has Dax getting together with her ex. That's in spot number 23.
I admit I can't really talk about that one because I didn't do the reading for that episode.
Oh dear. Yeah, I saw that and was like, what did Miles O'Brien do? No, it was you.
It was me.
Yeah, it was one of those episodes that felt, you know, it was fun. It was fairly emotionally resonant about Dax and her past lives. And yeah, about, you know, can you grow close to your ex again if you're not actually allowed to associate with people that you were involved with in a past life? Let's see. God, yeah, because below this, starting to look at things like The Cage, and this definitely feels better than The Cage.
Mm. Okay, so we've got above The Cage, we've got Pegasus, which is number 24 on the list, and that's Next Generation Season 7, Episode 12, where Riker hangs out with John Locke from Lost.
Yeah. Oh, that had some good drama. I think I might prefer this just a little to it. You know, like, out of these two, I was looking at that and going, what was that again? And seeing Ron Moore and the Lost reference on our synopsis. It's like, oh, yes, it's that one.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, I think as good as Terry O'Quinn is, yeah, I think the actors in this are all spectacular.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think better than that. Possibly under Rejoined, then?
That works for me.
Nice. So, that means our list has grown once again. And, yeah, we have all of our entries for tonight. All that's left for us to do is to say where we can be found and what are we doing next time. I picked Ferengi, so I believe it's up to you now.
All right. You want to talk about where they can find us while I...
Yeah, so you can find us as Casual Trek on Blue Sky by going to bsky... What is it? CasualTrek.bsky.social.
Yeah.
You can go to ko-fi.com/casualtrek to fling us a little bit of, you know, a few strips of gold-pressed latinum and suggest a theme, a character... a specific episode, and we will build an episode of the show specifically for that. You can find me on a few different places. Social network-wise, I'm on skyshark.bsky.social, where I'll be talking about RPGs and X-Men pretty much exclusively. I've been writing for Who Dares Roles, mainly about role-playing games, and yeah, I'm sure there's something else. But yeah, also go to fakedtales.com where I will occasionally remember to update my blog with what I've done. Because, yeah, that I need to get better at that. But that should, in theory, be the hub for my activity. Miles, what about you?
Well, they can find me on milesreedlibato.bsky.social for my Blue Sky account and on my blog at milesreedlibato.wordpress.com. No, it's mareedlibato.wordpress.com.
So, next episode, what are we going to be doing?
Okay, I think I've been looking over the list we have, and I think that down number 72 on the list, we have here trying an Enterprise three-parter with a three-part episode from Enterprise.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, with those bloody songs.
Yup. They're at it again.
Oh my god. They just don't stop.
Like, I swear these got the songs do more weird stuff with genetics and technology and crimes than the entire Kennedy family.
Wow. Okay. So, on that note, unlike the Kennedy family, go do a Starfleet.
If you have enjoyed this episode, please deposit two strips of latinum in the little box beside the door.
Yes. If you pay three, you will also get to eat a jelly baby.
Have a good day, but not for free.
Whee!
You have been listening to Casual Trek, a Nerd and Tie podcast, presented by Charlie Etheridge Nunn and Miles Reed Lobato. Music by Alfred Etheridge Nunn. Edited by the hosts and by Rihanna Reed Lobato. Star Trek is owned by Paramount. Not us. Not yet.